It's All Things Considered from NPR West. I'm Arun Roth.
Today, the beauty of Los Angeles is dramatically symbolical of the ancient prophecy that the desert shall bloom like a rose, for this city has become a modern Garden of Eden.
How did that desert bloom into this Garden of Eden, paving the way for Hollywood and Beverly Hills? This 1947 film, produced by Standard Oil of California, now Chevron, explains.
With great courage, men of vision and determination built a gigantic aqueduct system and trapped the white gold melting and tumbling from these lofty peaks.
Thus fulfilling the vision of William Mulholland, LA's chief water engineer, as he stood in front of 40,000 spectators 100 years ago this week, Mulholland gestured toward the water cascade charging down the hillside and declared, "There it is. Take it." That was the birth of the LA Aqueduct. It might as well have been the birth of the modern West. Moving vast quantities of water has made LA, Las Vegas, Phoenix, and other cities across the region possible. But it's come at a price, and that's our cover story today. How water built the American West, transforming some of the driest places into thriving cities. The $23 million LA Aqueduct project took 5,000 workers 5 years to complete. And here's a phrase you may not have heard. It finished on time and under budget.
The state of California would be different. You know, arguably, the world would be different without the LA Aqueduct.
That's John Christensen, the editor of Boom Magazine. Their latest issue looks at the 100-year anniversary of the Los Angeles Aqueduct. While the aqueduct brought water to LA, it took it from somewhere else, Owens Valley.
When the aqueduct was first built, people sold their agricultural lands and their water to the city of LA. There's lots of claims and evidence that some of that was done secretly without identifying who the real buyers were. And there were a lot of suspicions, but there were also a lot of willing sellers. Until it really became clear that Los Angeles was intent on taking most of that water. You know, over the years, several big protests occupying the site of the aqueduct, several bombings of the aqueduct, a lot of anger.
Mention water, politics, and California, and most people think of the 1974 film Chinatown.
See, Mr. Gitz, most people never have to face the fact that at the right time and the right place, they're capable of everything.
You know, that movie is really the great myth of the city and its relationship with Owens Valley and water. Almost nothing about it is historically accurate. But we still often get used in environmental debates and narratives that the big city came and took what it wanted with force and without any regard, you know, for Owens Valley. That troubling history is still very much alive, and it's embodied in this movie.
John Christensen is the editor of Boom Magazine. Chinatown may be fiction, but the century's worth of mistrust between L.A. and the rural Owens Valley is real. NPR's Kirk Sigler reports that it's one of the West's biggest water wars.
A ride in a helicopter is the best way to grasp the scale and beauty of the Owens Valley along the eastern Sierra Nevada.
We're going to leave our headsets off right now back here, okay?
The valley is sandwiched between some of the highest peaks in North America and the deserts of Death Valley.
We're looking across, probably about 30 miles of length of lake bed. In the background distance is eastern Sierra Nevada mountains, capped off by Mount Whitney.
This is Marty Adams, the L.A. Department of Water and Power's Director of Water Operations.
Well, right under us is basically a flat lake bed that was formerly like salt flats.
That dusty, briny pancake, as big as San Francisco, is now the dry Owens Lake, a direct consequence of 100 years of the L.A. Aqueduct.
Even Teddy Roosevelt, who was the President of the United States, declared that it was way more valuable to bring that water down to the city of Los Angeles so that the city could grow than it was to let it flow into the salt water of Owens Lake.
The only problem, when the wind blows here, and it does a lot, the dry lake bed can fuel massive dust storms. This area has long carried the dubious distinction of being the largest single source of particulate pollution in the country. And further upstream, the Owens River all but disappeared.
At one time, this valley floor was lush, green, orchards, fields, the agriculture, the farming, you know, we lived off of this land.
Up the road in Lone Pine, you'll meet a lot of folks like Mel Joseph. He grew up in the valley and always heard stories about what it used to be like before L.A. started buying up land, water rights, building dams and channels. A member of the Lone Pine Paiute Shoshone tribe, Joseph says people here are still struggling with asthma and other health issues attributed to the dust. There's no love lost between most people in this valley and the Department of Water and Power.
It's a desert climate, but they made it the Dust Bowl that it is today.
But the fact is, some things have been done to cool these tensions lately. A few years ago, led by then-L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, the city started pumping thousands of gallons of Sierra water back into the Owens River Channel.
By opening these gates today, we'll demonstrate to the world that the great city of Los Angeles is prepared to own up to its history.
Under court order, the city has also spent more than $1 billion so far on dust controls covering more than 90% of Owens Lake. Everyone agrees the air has gotten a lot cleaner, yet many locals rolled their eyes again when the city went back to court this year to argue that its cleanup job here is done. If nothing else, the quibble over that last 10% is a sign that one of the greatest water wars in the West isn't going to end anytime soon.
That's NPR's Kirk Ziegler. And as the water leaves the Owens Valley, it comes here to the Los Angeles Aqueduct Filtration Plant.
It's amazing. This whole aqueduct is just an engineering marvel.
Steve Torres is the water utility's superintendent.
We're producing about 420 million gallons today.
And all of that will get distributed to L.A.
The city of L.A. takes about 197 billion gallons a year.
This massive type of hydroengineering changed how we think of cities. Instead of building them where the water is, we build where we want. Dr. Doug Kenny directs the Water Policy Program at the University of Colorado Law School in Boulder.
Back in the 1800s, when John Wesley Powell came out to the West, he basically made the argument that the West shouldn't build large cities and that water was a constraint and people wanted to build large cities. And if that meant we had to enlist the talents of engineers to build pipelines and so on, well, then that's what we're going to do. And there's no denying the fact that without large water conveyance systems, we wouldn't have many of the large cities in the West.
The Western explorer John Wesley Powell would be surprised to see what the West has become today.
If you look at population growth by state, there seems to be this correlation that the drier the state, the faster the population growth. One example I'll give you is Las Vegas, who's dependent almost exclusively on the Colorado River, and they pull their water out of Lake Mead, which is the large reservoir behind Hoover Dam. The trends on the Colorado River are for decreasing flows, and sure enough, the storage level in Lake Mead has been falling in recent years. And the way that creates problems for Las Vegas is that they have their intake, their big pipes that go into the lake that take water out. They're starting to get worried that at least one of their intake is going to be above the water line, and so no longer useful.
So what would happen if a city like Las Vegas were to run out of water or to be in a situation where you couldn't meet the needs of the citizens?
You know, it's a really good question just because we don't have anything to point to. You know, it's one of the great success stories of the West, I think, is that you would think that maybe that would happen in an arid region, but it doesn't normally happen. What happens is sometimes water supplies get tight, and then cities have to tell people to use less water outside on their landscaping, and that gets them through a short-term problem. And over the long term, they can build more water projects.
So there's been some court challenges recently. The Supreme Court ruled in a case involving a water dispute between Oklahoma and Texas that local state rules actually trumped these agreements between states. There was also a case recently, Florida, I think, has just sued Georgia in a water rights dispute case. What do you make of these?
When I got out of college 20 years ago, the first thing I worked on was this dispute between Florida, Alabama, and Georgia, and it's still going strong. And
it's the same dispute?
It's the same dispute, and it's the nature of these interstate water disputes.
Do you take the Supreme Court decision as a sign that maybe that old way of doing business, I mean, the cliche is Chinatown, right, where a city steals water from a small town and the little guy gets run over. Is it a sign maybe that old way of doing business is gone, or is that, what do you think?
Well, I mean, in any fight, it still pays to be the big guy, but it's not as extreme as it used to be. In California, the LA Aqueduct and the Mono Lake and Owens Valley set of issues there is one that the rest of the country and really the rest of the world really looked to and said, you know, we really shouldn't behave in that way. You know, it shouldn't be that confrontational. And most places, including California, really have done better since then.
Doug Kenny is the director of the Western Water Policy Program at the University of Colorado Law School in Boulder. Doug, thank you.
Certainly.
Mark Gold is associate director of UCLA's Institute of the Environment and Sustainability. He says LA has made amazing strides in conservation. The city consumes the same amount of water it did in 1970, with 1 million more residents.
If you compare them to other major cities nationally, they're around 123 gallons per capita per day, which is the best in the entire nation. Just continually moving forward with tougher plumbing standards, which are required by state, having tiered pricing on cost. So from the standpoint, if you're a water waster, you're paying a lot more per gallon than if you're actually conserving water well.
Still, Gold says 80% of the water in the state of California is used for agricultural purposes, and he says that needs to be reduced. So the Garden of Eden will be around for a while longer, but it may have fewer lawns and golf courses and more water recycling. This is NPR News.